views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Today's show is going to be fantastic. Everybody has probably heard of Bitcoin, a cryptocurrency that is kind of taking the world by storm. A lot of big companies use it now, and it's pretty much being used all over the world as we speak. People are thinking it's going to be kind of the backing of the cashless society. I don't know if it's going to be just Bitcoin or if it's going to be other cryptocurrencies, because there are others as well. And I don't know how much it'll take over cash, because cash will probably still be around. People don't like to part from that. So it'll be part of our future for sure. But the technology behind Bitcoin is called blockchain, and blockchain is why Bitcoin has the power. Blockchain is also used for documents and all other kinds of things, ledgers. I did a show with Bitlan, who uses the blockchain technology to solve land grab problems and ownership problems in Africa. And so many of the issues in Africa has to do with natural resources and land. And they have to get that cleaned up in order to be able to grow and thrive in Africa. And so they're using that to clean that whole problem up. And you can listen to that, my show. It's from a few weeks ago. But I have an exciting person that's coming on the show today. First of all, blockchain supposedly was created by Satoshi Nakamoto, which is an anonymous person or group. Nobody knows who this person is. But I have an inventor who claims that he originally came up with blockchain many years before they did and published a patent using blockchain 6 months before they did. So he really is the inventor of blockchain and the inventor of one of the most important inventions behind currencies and finance today. And this is going to be his first interview that he's done. And he's going to explain what his patent process was when he first invented it, what his point was with it. We're also going to dive deep into blockchain and Bitcoin and talk about what some of the issues are with Bitcoin. People are talking about Bitcoin being able to be tapped into, hacked into. China's working feverishly to try to, you know, break Bitcoin and figure it out. And he has a solution that would make it completely safe. And he explains what that is and why Bitcoin could have an issue and why his system and the way he evolved it will not have those problems. He also talks about other problems behind Bitcoin and how you can solve those issues as well. He's a very smart guy, and he's amazing. He came up with his invention in 2000, and he'll explain his process. But before he got it patented, he became a patent lawyer himself. He had some bad experiences with a few of his other inventions, and he wanted to make sure this was completely secure. So he has a very interesting history. I think you will like this interview. So now let's welcome, his name is Kels Wilson, to the program. Hi, Kels. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
So you were, from what I understand, you were the first person in the world to use a patent using blockchaining. So essentially, you were the first one to use blockchaining in a patent, and you really are the true inventor, or the first inventor of blockchaining. Is that correct?
I believe so.
So when did you file your patent?
I filed my primary patent on blockchaining in April 25th, 2008, and I filed an auxiliary patent March 22nd, 2008, about a month prior.
Okay, and when did what is blockchaining usually commonly known for? Before I get into the other questions that I have.
Well, blockchaining was made famous by Bitcoin, which is a virtual currency, and it permits the users of that currency to trust in the ownership without there being a central bank or other entity that receives the trust.
Well, and it's very, very famous right now, and people think it's this form of digital tracking is going to take over finance and banking. But who do they give credit to creating that first version of blockchaining?
Well, that is created, sorry, it's currently credited to Satoshi Nakamoto, which is a fictitious person. Somebody or some people wrote an academic paper using that name, although it's not a real person.
And you filed your patent before they did.
I did, actually, about 6 months prior.
And it's the exact same thing.
It's very similar, although the applications are different.
The applications are different, but it's the same. It's blockchaining. So what is the story behind your patent?
Well, the story behind my patent is that I actually invented it in late 2000 and 2001. And I knew at the time that I had something that was so powerful that it could make a significant impact in the legal world and the financial world. And so I needed to get a patent on it. However, I had a previous bad experience with a patent attorney. So I realized I needed to become a patent attorney myself.
So you went on and became a patent attorney before you to be able to patent it?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Interesting. Go ahead.
That took me 7 years. So between having to separate from active duty, I was in the military at the time. I separated from active duty, went to law school, and then got a job working in some law firms, learning to write patents. And I waited until I had written enough patents and believed that I was skilled enough as an attorney before I started writing the patents on my primary inventions. I wrote patents on other inventions earlier on, sort of as practice.
So what do you feel when you hear that someone else is credited for something that you really created?
Well, I'm actually somewhat almost relieved that it's getting attention, because for years I had been trying to explain how my system worked to people at trade shows and other places. And I would try explaining and they would argue with me. Oh, it can't work. It can't work. There's no way that can work. And I was getting very frustrated trying to get people past this notion of you can trust something without there being anybody or any entity to trust. And then I discovered that blockchaining became famous from Bitcoin, and people understood it because they were interested in this idea of a virtual currency. So I'm actually somewhat relieved that people are understanding blockchaining now, first by having a motivation to learn about it from Bitcoin, and then I can explain, oh, by the way, my system was first and it's used for document proof. So,
and you're not worried about getting killed, right? Because it's not there's enough people that know about it right now, and it's out there enough that why would they bother messing around with you, right?
Well, yes. So what happens is I believe that the way Bitcoin implements blockchaining, there are some aspects of it that are not necessary for companies that don't worry about governmental interference, and certain things that make blockchaining more predictable and easier to use for straight-up companies that basically have a presence. And I believe that they're eventually going to move into exactly the system that I have.
Because it's simpler and easier to use.
I believe so, yes.
Well, what did you intend to use your version for?
What I intended to use my version for was simplifying disputes. There are a myriad of disputes in the world that can be resolved if some document can be proven to be authentic and believed by both sides. Examples would be a will or a contract. If multiple versions pop up, perhaps one was forged or altered. A good example of that is the situation that happened with Mark Zuckerberg and some career con artist who forged a copy of a contract regarding Facebook. And then people worried about wills being forged or altered. And then banks, of course, having ledgers that they would like to have believable and provable in case there's some type of a dispute as to ownership of funds.
And you think this could pretty much take over how documents are tracked and recorded? And I mean, that's your goal, right? For this to be the way things are done.
Yes, I hope that at some point there would be widespread adoption. And then what would happen is when some law firms used my system to register their wills and contracts and other important legal documents, that down the road, when somebody was going to challenge them, it would be a simple matter to look up, oh, it was registered in Petal. And so the accuracy or authenticity of that document then does not require expensive litigation to try proving whether it's legitimate or not.
It would reduce the cost of all that. And then you just debate over what's actually in the document.
Correct.
Which is what it should be anyways. So I'm going to get back to my off-the-cuff comment. You know, one of the reasons why the other blockchain person is anonymous is because this is the story anyways, is he fears for his life. Is there any reason to even fear for your life? I mean, let's just be honest.
I don't see the threat that he sees. With my version, I was intending on it basically, you know, being used for straight up businesses that didn't worry about police powers. However, I know that a lot of virtual currencies are being used by criminals and organized crime. So just being involved with that at all might give the person some concern, but I don't know exactly what the basis of it would be.
Or taking over currency in general. I mean, if you think that you're trying to replace the dollar, for example, that is, or the Federal Reserve, that could be kind of scary.
Yes, I don't believe virtual currencies will replace actual currencies.
You think that it'll just be another option?
I think it'll be just another option, yes.
Okay, so what do you believe that blockchaining can do other than documents and things? What other ways can it really help society?
Well, if I would have known that, I would have come up with alternative applications for it. I had been concentrating, you know, my efforts on developing a system that would just simply make certain legal disputes easier, less expensive, more accurately or more reliably to be solved. So I am sure there's going to be a number of new applications for it. But I'm not sure of any right now, actually, unfortunately.
Well, I just interviewed somebody that is using blockchaining to track land documents. So it's essentially what you're doing, sort of, but they're tracking people in Africa. Because in Africa, there's a lot of land grabs, and nobody really knows who owns the land. And so they're going to track the ownership of land using blockchaining technology.
That would make sense. I mean, once you actually have the ability to establish document authenticity, that itself is a tool, much like a wrench, which you can fix airplanes, automobiles, tractors. And so being able to establish that this particular information was in existence and publicly available at this time and it hasn't changed since that time, that's an incredible building block that can be used to solve a myriad of problems.
Are you getting more attention now that people are starting to realize that you originally came up with blockchaining and it wasn't this anonymous person? Are you starting to get people to realize that, no, that you are actually the initial inventor?
I am, but it's a small group of people so far.
Because it's really a historical thing, right? I mean, to patent something that is going to be kind of the cornerstone of finance and a lot of other industries is a big deal.
Yes, I believe so. This is why when I had the I had the invention idea in late 2000, and basically the system as it is now in my patent, I had that figured out by January of 2001, and I immediately applied to law school and started law school in the fall. I changed careers simply because I believed in the power of this idea. What? And I endured 7 years of, you know, not only law school, but working in law firms, learning how to write patents specifically so that I could get my IP protected and try starting this business.
So do you feel protected now? I mean, you having a patent law degree, do you feel that you're still protected from the big powers that are out there?
Well, there's always battles of resources, so I don't know what that holds in store. But I believe my patents are fairly solid.
So do you expect the big players to come forward and want to buy license this from you? Is that your plan, or do you want to do it yourself, you know, implement all this?
I would certainly like to run a portion of it myself. However, if someone were to take a look at my patents, they would see that I've actually described an entire ecosystem. The patents are actually quite detailed and long, and I describe multiple actors within the environment. And so there's room for big players, large companies, banks, law firms, as well as small service providers and software authors. But then what I'd like to do is, you know, basically have the central core of collecting the document records.
So what does that mean? How do we have all these other players involved?
Well, there are all sorts of ways that documents can be selected or processed for recording, and all sorts of different sub-industries. So, for example, currently, if somebody were to have a blockchain that was just distributed randomly and there was no centralized control or over membership, then that blockchain could be hijacked by random people, even maybe with malicious intents, just jumping in and throwing in all sorts of entries into the blockchain. So if you were to have a blockchain that was limited to some banks as submitters, then the large banks can run that. Same thing with legal documents. You might have a blockchain that is for legal documents, and there's a controlled group of law firms that can submit documents to that so that the blockchain doesn't become unwieldy, grow too fast, and maintain some degree of quality control.
Well, and that's the same with Bitcoin. They're controlling the number of Bitcoins and how that's the ledgers are being created.
There is. However, if you notice a lot in the news, there is a dispute about a potential coming data crunch for Bitcoin. And the reason that that can occur is because there is little to no control over who gets to join the community.
Mm. What is there a backdoor way of taking over the system, or is it really as secure as people say it is? Because now, let's say, what if you need three people to change the document, or multiple people to change the document? Is that accurate?
With my system, nobody can change the document. Once a document's once there's been a registration and the edition has been published, nobody on the planet, including me, can make any alterations whatsoever. It is fixed solidly forever.
Can you make a new version?
somebody can make a new version of a document, but then they would have to resubmit it. And the new version would only appear in the chain after its creation. The earlier version
would still
leave its mark. That's right. And so later on, if there was a dispute as to the contents of that document, it'd be easy to identify which of the versions was the earlier version and which one was the modified later version.
Well, but now that's different than with Bitcoin. With Bitcoin, they change ownership, right? Multiple people get together and they can change the ownership of that Bitcoin.
Well, correct. But what happens is it's the ledger that remains fixed. So what happens is when there is a transaction, the transaction is annotated in the ledger. And so what would happen is that later on, if somebody wanted to know who the proper owner of the Bitcoin was, they would look at the ledger and identify, okay, the last person that was on the receiving end is the owner.
Yeah, and but can't you simulate? Couldn't you simulate that transaction? A hacker could simulate the transaction, but you would have the original recording of it. So somebody can say, hey, I didn't do that, but you could still simulate it, right?
Well, with Bitcoin uses digital signatures of the participants in the transaction. So
you could simulate the digital signature if you're smart enough as a hacker, right?
I don't believe currently anybody has the ability to forge those signatures. I know that, the Chinese have been working on using, their supercomputing power to look for ways to crack the SHA family of hash values. And I believe Bitcoin uses the SHA-256. I use two separate hash functions simultaneously, which would make Petal considerably more difficult to forge or crack than Bitcoin.
Interesting. So they could use your system for Bitcoin, couldn't they? If they ended up cracking the blockchaining that is used in Bitcoin, they could switch over to your system, and your system would be even more secure.
Somebody could do so, yes. My system doesn't allow for generation of new Bitcoins, though.
Well, the blockchaining part is the same.
Correct.
Just you would have to add to the implement. They could take your blockchaining part of it and implement it in Bitcoin.
Yes.
The secure part of it. So if they decide, if China was able to crack that, then they could add your stuff and it would be almost completely, secure. I mean, it would be impenetrable, if that's a word. You couldn't penetrate.
Yes. So if the Chinese cracked the SHA-256, then Petal, as it exists now, could act as a backstop.
Interesting. So people hearing that they're going to like that. So are you in talks with anybody to utilize your technology beyond what you have going on right now with Petal?
Not currently, no.
Nobody in the banking system?
No, not yet. I'd like to be, but I'm not yet.
I think you will be once your name gets out there. I think that it's kind of it should be an exciting time for you. I think once people realize who the real founder of blockchaining is, it'll change your life. Or at the very least, you'll be having speaking arrangements and talking to people about how you can use this technology more and what things you can do. I know my son was just invited. My son's an engineering student at Northwestern University in Chicago, and he was invited to do a seminar at MIT, a thing to learn, to understand blockchaining. And so they're teaching all these engineering students all over the country at these top schools blockchaining. And I could just see you going around and teaching people about that, but executives and all sorts of top people. That'd be fun for you, I think, or maybe not. I don't know.
You know, I have written a academic paper that I was trying to get published. Hasn't been published yet. I suppose I could send that to you, and maybe you could give it to your son and see what he thinks about it.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I'd love to see that, and I could forward it on to him. And yeah, well, I think it's exciting. So what else do you have up your sleeve with this stuff?
Well, I actually have a system in which a person can register paper-only documents with Petal, so that later on, if there's no digital version of the document, only a paper copy that needs to be scanned in to a PDF, that document can actually be verified with Petal.
How do you do that? How can you verify that this piece of paper is the piece of paper?
Well, actually, what happens is I don't verify a particular piece of paper. What I verify is the information on the paper. And that was actually my first invention, which then spawned Petal. The idea would be that if somebody had a multi-page will, a five-page will, and page three was altered without their knowledge, that later on, if only the paper copy was available, the alteration could be detected using Petal.
We need to take a short break, and we'll be back in a moment after these messages.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Pat. The ancient Inca root vegetable maca is world-renowned for its wide array of health benefits. As a family-run company of true maca specialists, the Maca Team's mission is to provide you with fresh, organic, premium-quality maca powders at a fair price. Amazing. All of the products are always organically grown, fair-traded, GMO-free, fresh, and potent. So don't take my word for it. Experience the life-changing benefits of maca today. Visit themacateam.com.
There are so many resources out there for meditation. But did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes, that's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Vadili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's A-T-A-A-N-A method.com, and sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Pat. I am so thrilled. I've had the honor of working with Leslie Fontaine for the past year or so, and what she has created in her hit program, Sheer Alchemy, transcends what most of us get to listen to or hear in any point in time in our lives. But beyond that, Leslie is working with people all over the world, and she has created something phenomenal based on the feedback and input from the Archangels, from the Ascended Masters, from the light beings, and most importantly, from each and every one of you. So if you want to change your life, if you're ready to step into your own version of Sheer Alchemy, please give Leslie a call at 678-665-3366. And why? Because this is what you're going to be prepared to do. Be amazed, and on your part, connect with the Ascended Masters that are there to help you custom make the life that you are meant to live.
A word of caution, if you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Welcome back. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Business Game Changers. Hey, I wanted to remind you that you can reach my radio show on over 100 different digital channels. We are streaming live on TransformationTalkRadio.com and WBLQ.net. And on all your favorite podcast channels, you should be able to find the show. We are also live on terrestrial radio on WBLQ 1230 AM, one of the only stereo AM stations on the East Coast out of New York, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. So hopefully you will be able to find us on one of your favorite channels. And we are going to get back to our interview with Kels Wilson, but I wanted to give you some contact information. You can reach him. Well, all of this will be on my radio page at sarahwestall.com. So if you want to find any of those links there, but he has some websites that you can reach him on, which is www.pedal.com, P-E-D-D-A-L.com, and then also patentmarketingllc.com, and you can see a bunch of his inventions there. Very interesting. And once again, I'll have all of that on my radio page. So now let's get back to our interview with Kels Wilson.
So yes. What else do you have up your sleeve? Keep them coming. I'm interested.
Well, I actually have several inventions that I've patented. And my plan was to license or sell some of those other inventions to get myself seed money to get Pedal up and running.
And what are those?
Well, they range from exercise equipment, woodworking tools, and some computer security.
Okay, so if people are interested in those patents, do you have a website where people can look at what you have?
Yes, it's Patent Marketing LLC.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll add that to the radio page.
Okay.
LLC.com?
Let me check whether it's .com or .org. Sorry for the delay.
No problem. Well, and maybe you'll get somebody to license what you have going on with the blockchaining as well. And I like the idea that it has more security than what Bitcoin is using, because, like I said, somebody's going to crack that system and eventually, right? And if the Chinese crack the system, now they have access to Bitcoin. But if they can switch out the security part of Bitcoin to something that's just completely secure, not that Bitcoin isn't, it's pretty secure, but even a whole nother layer with the same concepts, then it's golden.
Yes. So it is patentmarketingllc.com.
Okay. That sounds great. Well, I will create a radio page with that information on it, and I'll also have information to how people can, your website, pedal.com, right?
Pedal.com, yes.
And right now, are you selling anything? Like, can people add their document? What do you do now? Are people able to use it now?
Well, we do not have our e-commerce website up and running. So currently, what I need is for people to download the record generator, generate their records on their own computers, and then send me the document records. I never see the documents, and I don't want to see anybody's documents. Your documents can stay perfectly private on your own computer system. And then we would put it into an edition, and then you would have a copy of that edition, and then the edition's fingerprint is published in the USA Today newspaper in the classified ad section.
So that it has a public profile that way as well.
Exactly right. And once that is published, then anybody that challenges you for backdating documents has a very difficult problem on their hand, because in order for you to have forged the document, you would have had to crack the SHA-1 and SHA-512 simultaneously, which is virtually impossible. And
you have to do that you have to do it simultaneously for it to work. So
correct.
Basically, it's not like you can do it serial. You have to do it at the same time, which is not happening.
Right.
Oh, that's great. I understand that.
The same document has to provide both a collision in SHA-1 and a collision in SHA-512 at the same time.
Do you have that patented, that concept?
That's in the patent, yes.
Excellent.
And then what happens is the other attack for forgery is that you have basically forged every single copy of the USA Today that's in all the library basements, you know, on the microfiche all around the world. So
you have to forge everyone. It's not happening.
That's right.
Interesting. So how much would it cost for, let's say, you know, a big company law firm wants to put their documents in here? How much do they pay for an official contract to be docked there?
Well, I was we haven't finished our pricing model yet. I was hoping to sell a subscription-based service in which large companies could submit in the range of hundreds or thousands of records per month for a very modest fee in the low $100 range, or individual IP creators, part-time users, people who only had like one or two documents that they want to throw into the system could do it for, you know, $100 per document.
That sounds like a wonderful price range. I mean, I can't see why anybody wouldn't do it. If it's for hundreds of thousands of documents, they can do it for what you said. That seems very inexpensive. Now, what kind of, how many people are you going to need to manage a system like that? Or is it pretty low intensity?
Well, it's not a very difficult system to manage. I can run a pretty decent capacity with most of the industries that I'm expecting with a crew of under 20.
Okay. So how much money do you need to get your business off the ground, do you think?
Oh, I would need maybe $300,000 to $400,000, I'm thinking, to get the capacity that I would need. However, my plan is to try growing it incrementally.
Because you want to maintain ownership?
I want to maintain ownership of the compilation portion.
So who can... go ahead.
There's a couple aspects to it. One would be the collection. So, for example, if there was one blockchain stream that was working within the banking industry, okay, somebody could control the members and the rate and collect all of the record entries from that industry and basically police them for only people that, you know, paid in could make submissions. And then they would provide that to me as a wrapped up bundle. The same in the legal industry. I don't need to be doing all of the collections, but I'd like to take over the primary publication of the ads in the newspaper and the centralized publication of the ultimate blockchain editions.
So you want to maintain the integrity of the system and making sure all that stuff happens. But that would be a pretty low cost that you would be charging, right? Where they could do the service on top of it.
Correct. I would not be controlling who, myself, you know, who submitted, who doesn't submit, how many. I would just be taking whatever comes in, and I would, I could see industry experts running their own blockchain within their industry that just fed into the primary pedal system, but they would have whatever policies fit their industry that they were aware of being experts in that industry. I don't need to have any control over that.
Okay. But there's still a ton of money you can make doing that. I mean, is your goal to make money?
Yeah. Well, actually, yes. I mean,
or is it just a fun byproduct? It's a very nice byproduct of being an inventor, obviously. But, you know, a lot of people who are really focused on inventions and creating things, they want to make money because who doesn't want to? But is your focus on making a difference in the world, or is your focus on both? I mean, I guess it could be both.
Well, I believe in making money while helping people. When I went to law school, I saw all sorts of people that would say, oh, I'm in law school to help people. And I'd say, no, you're in law school to help your wallet. And
although sometimes lawyers aren't making as much money these days unless you really, right? There's so many of them.
That's true. There's a glut, and I noticed that lot of law firms are having trouble with placing their graduates.
Not in patent law, but in other, you could make a heck of a lot of money just in patent law doing that, let alone all your inventions.
Well, that was the plan, actually. I endured law school. It was a nighttime program, an hour and a half commute each way when there was no bad weather or traffic accidents or road construction. And
what law school?
I went to Capital University in Columbus, Ohio. I was living in Dayton at the time.
Okay. I teetered with the idea of going to law school, and everybody talked me out of it, telling me that I would hate it because I'm so, they just told me I'd hate it. But I had a bad experience with bad experiences get you thinking about law school because you're like, darn it, I'm never going to get hosed over that that way again. And I couldn't learn fast enough. Right. But
yeah, well,
go ahead.
I had some teachers who taught on subjects that were interesting to me and were enthusiastic about it.
Makes all the difference.
One of the professors who's since passed away, Mike Distelhorst, taught a lot of my economic law classes, and I loved having classes with him. However, by and large, law school was much like having an appointment for root canal.
Exactly. It would be awful. I equate it to when I was younger and my sister was in swimming and they made me go to swimming and I had to swim laps every morning. I'm like, it's like a root canal. I hate this. So for those swimmers out there, I'm not disparaging swimming. I just am not a swimmer. So I felt like I was just, same thing. I have a engineering degree and there was some classes I just felt like I could pull my hair out.
Oh, okay. Which engineering discipline?
I have a computer science from the University of Minnesota Engineering School.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So I'm interested in all these things that you're doing. I still think, I think there's a backdoor way to make a lot of things happen, but with your secure system, I understand that, and I think that's fantastic. I think China's going to crack. I think they're going to eventually crack the Bitcoin security, and I think your system can solve that problem. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I hope so. Their system, Bitcoin, is distributed. It's got automated distribution. I have a centralized distribution. I'm going to send you an article, the draft that I wrote and that I mentioned. And what it'll do is, after you read it, you will understand very clearly the similarities and differences between Petal and Bitcoin.
Okay. And do you think that the distribution system is a big difference in – do you think it's superior as well?
It is superior – in some ways, but not always. It's not as agile or fast. However, I think that the totally decentralized currency blockchains are going to suffer from bloat and lack of quality control.
Well, because each time you put a system in place, you have to have complete redundancy of what all came before it. Right. And so as it grows, it becomes that much more expensive to have the infrastructure for it.
Yes.
Yeah. I had Ed Moy, who was the past director of the U.S. Mint. And he was just right.
Okay.
And he's really into Bitcoin. And he came on and explained what Bitcoin was and blockchaining and everything else. And I think he would find this is really interesting. I think there's a lot of people that find what you're doing is really interesting. I don't know if it would replace some of the stuff, but it could enhance it, especially since whoever's behind it is a supposedly anonymous and they don't care about the credit for it or what it is. They just want it to work. I could imagine that, for the downfalls, they should talk to you. And for, obviously keep what's better, superior, and change what isn't. And if they have bloating issues, then maybe there's some solutions.
Well, yes, but I'm thinking that the current debate that's raging within the blockchain community now is symptomatic of what can happen later on. Now, my understanding is Ethereum is somewhat technically superior to blockchain. But again, if you don't have a centralized control for quality control, now...
But isn't that the reason they sell that? Because they don't want anybody to centrally control money. They don't like the whole notion of that.
Right. So that is true for the Bitcoin community. So what happens is with Bitcoin, you have decentralized distribution of the blockchain. So that means that nobody can alter it, because if one person tries altering it, then the copies that are in other people's hands obviously show the attempted alteration.
Sure. Okay?
However, for the currencies, you want to have some degree of autonomy in terms of, if you have a transaction, you don't want anybody to be a gatekeeper on whether that transaction occurred.
Exactly.
However, what's happening with Bitcoin is, because of the flood of community members, there have been situations in which certain transactions didn't pop up on the register because there wasn't enough room for it.
Ooh.
Yes, and so those transactions weren't registered
because the systems need to expand. They need more hardware and memory and all that stuff.
That's exactly right. But then there's really no way to collect the money. This is why, after you read that article, you'll see where I mentioned that there are some industries for which centralized control is desirable and preferable.
What can you do? Sort of like, could you do a distributed centralized control? So it's an unknown exactly where it's distributed, but it's more centrally distributed. So it could be all over the place. But do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, you could have a hybrid.
Yes, a hybrid.
There is some rule set, but there's multiple different actors implementing that rule set. But there's a controlled number of multiple different actors. It's not just anybody can become a control point. Is you could have multiple control points, and if one of them doesn't meet your goals, you go to another one.
Exactly. But it's still not centrally controlled in the sense of like the Federal Reserve kind of centrally controlled. It's a distributed,
right,
democratic situation, and it can grow, but it's a hybrid. So from a computing standpoint, we don't have the issues, but from a people control standpoint, that doesn't exist anymore.
Yes, right. And you know, my system can handle that type of a situation. I call it sub-peddling, where you would have one organization collecting their own version of a blockchain that, and they can publish it independently, but then what they'll do every so often is they will throw that into a bigger blockchain. So you can have basically a hierarchy of blockchains.
Yeah, excellent. Exactly.
You know, one for the banking industry, or maybe a couple for the banking industry. You know, maybe like Asia banking industry and North America and Europe banking industry.
Yeah, it's to manage this hardware software situation, because you're going to have a limitation, and not every server system. If your whole system across the world is dependent on every single server system being able to handle the volume, you're hosed. At some point, if some idiot didn't update their thing, you're stuck. But if you have a hybrid distribution system where, okay, this one failed, but so what? We don't need them all to, you know what I'm saying?
Right. I view the totally distributed blockchain systems as largely an email system that doesn't have a spam filter. At first, when there's only people that are enthusiastic about Bitcoin involved, okay, that's great. But later on, when you start getting all sorts of other people showing up, you know, the Me Toos, and then you get malicious people involved who are just going to end up doing transactions for no other purpose than something like the equivalent of a denial of service attack.
Yes.
And so the
that's the backdoor stuff. You can screw up a server, because if all distribution has to occur at the same time in every server, you could screw it up by just not letting it happen.
That's true. And so basically you could have some hacking group disrupting a virtual currency that doesn't have a lot of control over how it grows merely by, well, right now, what they do is they turn people's computers into bots to do distributed denial of service attack. And so a lot of virtual currencies might very well be vulnerable to some type of an attack in which, you know, people's unwitting, you know, people's computers are unwittingly turned into some type of Bitcoin contributor, only for the purpose of clogging up the the blocks.
Yeah, you could do it that way. Whereas if you did a distributed, a hybrid where it's more controlled, but not controlled by, you know, the man, but distribute, the man is distributed, but still a hybrid control, then you would eliminate that problem.
Right. So what you want to do is, in that article I mentioned, you read the section distributed versus centralized chain control.
Okay. Yeah. Send that to me. Excellent.
I just did.
Oh, okay.
And then also the section on verifying printed-only documents with a blockchain.
Can I have people have access to those documents, or is that secret stuff?
Well, I'm hoping to get it published. So just so long as I can say it's not been published anywhere, then yes, you can pass
well,
it around.
Well, I can. How about if I don't post it on my website until you give me permission? Until you publish it, then send it to me, and then I'll add it later. But I'll just send it to my son and different people that will be interested.
Yes, I think he will like the explanation of how you can detect forgery in a paper-only document.
Excellent. How wonderful. You know what? This conversation got more fun once we started talking about some of these details. So I really enjoyed this talk with you today, and I really hope people learn who you are, and I think there's a lot of benefits to how you can improve blockchaining and with what you're doing.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Well, fantastic. You have a wonderful day and a great weekend.
You too.
Okay, thanks.
I hope you enjoyed that great interview with Kels. I found it very fascinating to find somebody who actually invented blockchain. The world thinks it's somebody else, and it's really him. And we'll see how history goes down. It's not always fair how history gets tracked. So we'll see if he gets credit for that or if it stays as it is today. We'll see, and we'll keep people posted on that. And I want to remind you again, you can go to sarahwestall.com and listen to all my past podcasts and also this and get contact information for him as well. His email address will be up there in case you have questions for him. And I want to tell you that I do have comments open, but I literally get thousands of spam comments, and I don't know where all that's coming from. And so my spam filter is taking all these comments out. And so I don't have any comments up there because there's literally thousands and thousands of spam comments. So I don't know what to do. We're trying to fix that problem. But you can always send me an email if you have comments or questions or concerns. I would love your feedback on that as well. And I have my email address up on sarahwestall.com as well. So for now, I hope everyone has a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.